Hi, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. On the Prepare Podcast, I meet with women of faith and in ministry to hear from their experiences and wisdom to help prepare us in our faith, pursuits, and callings. Thanks for listening. I am your host, Sarah Makula. This month, I sit down with Captain Lisa Barnes, a Salvation Army officer from the Western Territory of the United States. I know you're going to not only enjoy my conversation with Lisa because she's witty and funny, but also because her story of redemption is rich and full of grace and mercy. You won't be able to help but say praise God and thank you, Jesus, throughout the episode. I can already tell you up front that Lisa's story and our conversation has inspired the theme for our Embrace group questions for April. The theme is Embrace Being Brave. You'll hear how and why being brave was chosen. Okay, here's my conversation with Lisa. Hi, Lisa, our Captain Lisa. How would you like to be addressed?
Lisa's fine. It's all made up anyway. So.
Okay.
The Lisa part is authentic. The captain will change.
That's real. And I was about to mention your middle name, but we'll get to that. That'll come. Thank you for making time during Regeneration to come and be the next guest on the Prepare Podcast. Yeah, so the Prepare Podcast, for anyone that's tuning in for the first time, is a podcast for women and men, because we have a number of men that listen, which is we're very encouraged by. We think that's great, where we meet with women of faith and a ministry to learn from their wisdom and experiences to better prepare and equip us in our faith, pursuits, and callings. So you're an officer from the Western Territory.
Yep.
Here's a special guest at Regeneration.
Yep.
To speak on reconciliation, and you'll be sharing tonight and tomorrow, and we're all eager to hear from you. So let's give our listeners a little bit of background on who is Lisa Barnes.
Cool. Well, I came to the Salvation Army through a food box. My mom was an addict and a prostitute, and the lady who was in charge of social services at my home corps in Gresham, Oregon, dropped a food box at my house and invited me to come to youth group. So that was kind of where my origin story started. And I went to youth group terrified of what people would think about me, terrified that people would find out about who I was or where I'd come from, or that I lived in the projects, or that my mom was a whore, and that they would disown me or make fun of me. And they all found out. They all knew who I was and who my mom was, and they loved me just the same. So once I started going, I never stopped, and I fell in love with the Army. I fell in love with the misfits that make us who we are, and I fell in love with the message of redemption and restoration for all. So I've been in the ministry since we were commissioned in 2008, so pretty long time. We were in San Francisco for a while, 2.5 years running a corps there. We were divisional youth and candidate secretaries in the Southwest, which is Arizona and Mexico and part of Vegas, part of Nevada, for 5.5 years. And we've been in Seattle for since June, so about 7-8 months in the hood of Seattle. It has the highest concentration of people living below the poverty line in the entire state of Washington. And I love it with my whole heart. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I have a super hot husband, so I'm excited.
Ooh, you and me both. Nice.
Yeah, we've been married for almost 13 years. We have a boy who's 12. We have a little girl who's almost 5. Our son's name Anthony. Like my husband, you get a 2-for-1, mostly just because we couldn't agree on names. And our daughter's name is Layla, but we call her Hurricane. And we have a puppy who's the light of my life, and a fat cat, and we're just living life, doing what we do. Part of what makes me is I wrote a book called Love to a Whore's Daughter, which gives me permission to say the word whore whenever I want. I've decided. Let it be written. It is written. I'm working with Danielle Strickland right now in an empowerment curriculum for girls in foster care called Brave. I wrote a guided journal that goes along with this program, a mentorship empowerment thing, because they call the foster care system the pipeline to the sex industry. So this is our preventative effort to get to these girls before someone else does.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Yeah.
Okay. I think what the method we're going to take in this episode, because I already have a million questions based on that, but I'm going to see if this method will unwrap some of those questions in my mind and have them answered. So we're going to go with what we've done in the past with many other guests, asking the question or letting you answer the question. If you knew me, you would know. And so we'll go the first level surface, and then the next a little deeper, and then the third, a more vulnerable response, that's something that, you know, some of our listeners may be able to really resonate with. Sure. So let's start at the surface, and you answer, if you knew me, you would know.
If you knew me, you would know that I'm weird, and I have stretched ears, and I'm covered in tattoos. I would like to be more covered in tattoos. It's my great ambition in life. The face is off limits. That's my money maker. But everywhere else.
Yes,
no, I'm just kidding. But yeah, so I look different than most Christian women in leadership. And I am at the point where I love that about myself. Mm-hmm. And then the next level is like a little bit more deep. Yeah.
Yeah. Or do you want to share anything else from that first level? Like, tell, like, what got you into tattoos? What got you into the style that you have that makes you unique?
Yeah, you know, I just spent a long time pretending to be somebody else. And it's exhausting. And I tried for a long time to look normal and look like all the other Stepford soccer moms. And if that's who they are, if that's who you are, then dance in that skin. But it's not who I am. And part of the reason, probably the biggest reason why I have tattoos and stretched ears is because I don't have a family. I was cast out of my house when I was 15 years old. So I don't really have connection to my race, my nationality, my country of origin, my language of origin. And I think that's incredibly important for who we are as people. So I feel like the culture and people group that I most relate to is the postmodern millennial. And this is what we look like.
And you find that there's many other in the Salvation Army in that subculture that you connect with?
Not really. I think there's some. I think there's more of us coming out, you know. But there's a couple of people who – I have a good friend. Her name is Sierra. And she's in my division in the West. And we look very similar. Like, she's an event today, texted me today saying I've got confused for you three times today. Because we're both giants.
Yeah.
She got skinny, so whatever. Now I'm the fat one. But
I was noticing, I'm like, you are quite tall.
Yeah, I'm pretty. I used to be taller. I used to be 5'10". Now I'm only 5'9 and a half. 5'8 and a half.
You can't start shrinking yet.
I know, my children, they took it. They messed up my vertebrae, I'm convinced. Jerks. The best years of my life and my vertebrae. So it's funny that her and I, you know, get confused for each other a lot. And I am glad because she's pretty.
Yeah.
So if she looked like a troll and we got confused for each other a lot, I'd be a little offended.
You're like, okay, I'll take it.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
Yeah. But that's when I see people who look like me, when I see, I call, you know, the weird girls that have the tattoos or the stretched ears or piercings on their face or whatever. Mm-hmm. My first thought is, oh, my people are here.
Yeah.
You know, my people are here. I'm safe.
I remember the first time, it was like early, you know, like, I mean, I've been a part of the Salvation Army my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I remember like being a subbie and like accepting Jesus. But I know I didn't really start living a Christian life until I was about 22.
Yeah.
And so it was maybe like 4 years into that when I was feeling like, I don't know any other Christians. Mm. One of my girlfriends, Lindsay, and I and a few other Salvation Army folks went to this fest in like the like a really rural part of Illinois. It was called Papa Fest. It was people against apathy. Oh, gosh. Now I forget. I'll come up with it later.
Because you said Papa, and I'm from California, and Papa is Spanish for potatoes.
Oh.
And I'm all, ooh, I love Papa. Quieres papas aquí?
That's a festival I want to go to. No, it was people against poverty and apathy.
Oh, cool. Got it.
And so it was always,
I still prefer potatoes.
Yeah, like, I'd really like to go to a potato fest. So it was just a really one of those moments where you're like, wow, there's other Christians that aren't that are different.
They get it,
and
right?
It's like a subculture of a young adult Christians that I didn't know existed. And it really gave me encouragement when you just feel alone.
Yeah. Yep.
Especially when you're young in your faith and trying to figure it out. I'm like, okay, there are people that care about these things. And yeah, so
that's cool.
It is encouraging when you find people.
I'm not the only one, right?
That look like you and are like-minded.
Yeah,
super cool. Okay, any more anecdotes to that story of how you're, you know, how you wear who you are.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is when I'm places for the first time, like we moved from the Southwest Division, which was, you know, Arizona area to Seattle. And the very first thing we were at in our new division was like our family camp. And I make sure when I'm somewhere for the first time, I look as weird as possible.
Yeah.
Like I let my freak flag fly hard.
That's one of my favorite phrases.
Because I think if someone's going to decide, you know, I'm too weird for them, or if they're going to not be inclusive, I want them to not be inclusive from the jump. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to waste my time. So I go places and I make sure my tattoos are out. I make sure my biggest dangly, gigantic, stretched earrings are out. I make sure, you know. So, you know, I just make sure that people can see me for who I am straight away. Because a lot of times people will front, like they're down front, like they're okay with being your friend when you look different. And, you know, maybe that's because my hair is usually crazy in colors or dreads in or whatever, or my tattoos. Or sometimes it's because you're black or brown or you're Asian. Or, you know, whatever those things that maybe you didn't choose to do to yourself that people are uncomfortable with. And so I make sure that people can see me for who I am straight away. So they have an out. So we don't waste our time. And I can connect with people that are going to hear it and are going to be responsive to me. And then I can be responsive to them in turn.
Do you remember a time that you were surprised by a really positive reception from someone maybe you expected to... Yeah. Not receive you.
Yeah. You know, it was cool. We were at an FOF weekend. Y'all have that here? Future officers, if you want to go to
fellowship.
Training. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You think you want to be an officer, you go to this thing. Well, when we were DYSs, every year for 5 years, I was at this thing. And there was a couple people who clearly were like relatively new, trying to figure it out, maybe not even soldiers yet. And there's this woman that came up to me and my tunic was off. So she saw some of my tattoos on my arms and she looked at me and she says, I didn't know they let us come. And I'm all, yeah, dude, they let you come. And let me tell you what else they let you do, you know? And I found that being different, if I'm continuing to be a person of integrity, if I'm continuing to be a person who believes strongly in holiness and my walk with the Lord and showing up for work and doing what's right and keeping the receipts and being honest, I can really do whatever I want, you know? And I think there's a lot of freedom in that. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, well, let's go to the next level deeper of if you knew me, you would know.
If you knew me, you would know that you would probably know a lot about what happened in my life with my mom, with my real mom, and what that meant, and the residual effects of her prostitution, what that carried over into my life. You would know that I'm still afraid of the dark. You would know that I still am a little bit apprehensive and I have a fear in the back of my mind that the people that love me the most will leave me. You would know that when I see a woman on the street who's clearly without a home and as she's older, I get a little nervous that it might be my mom, you know, and I take a second look and I think, is that her? And sometimes I want it to be and sometimes I don't. It's never been her. But those are the fears and the kind of residual effects of growing up the way I grew up, what it has, how it affects me now as a 33-year-old grown adult with my own kids.
How does it affect your ministry? Does it?
Yeah, I think it does. I think I have a lot more grace and compassion, especially for kids, when I see kids whose parents are really going through it. You know, at our core, we have a lot of kids, the kids that have the most behavior issues, the kids that have the hardest time sitting still and listening or don't really understand language appropriateness or volume appropriateness or any of those things. Those are the ones that I usually gravitate to first.
Yeah.
Because I see them as little Lisas, you know, both boys and girls. And I look at them and I'm like, oh, I get it, sweetie. You know, I get it. And I make sure that they know that they are loved and wanted. And we have a girl who comes to our core. She's in second grade. And she just has commandeered my heart because I know where she comes from. And this girl is so sweet. And I moved her up into my Sunday school class, even though I have the older kids, third grade and up. I've taken her into mine. So she's there. And my husband we alternate preaching every other week. And just this last week, he gave a message on seeing what God sees. And in the back of the chapel, he placed these mirrors. And he, after the message, that was the altar call time, was to go to the mirror. And at the top, it said, look in here and look in this mirror and look at yourself with the eyes that God looks at you through. And then there was the verse at the bottom about how man look at outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And this girl grabbed me by my hand, and she didn't want to go to junior church. She stayed back with us, and she grabbed me by the hand, and she says, come with me to go look in the mirrors. And I stood behind her, and we looked in these mirrors, and I put my hands on her shoulders, and I'm like, what do you see? And I was expecting her to be very self-deprecating and say things about herself that weren't kind or whatever. But she looks in this mirror, and she says, I see beauty. I see kindness. I see someone who has a future. This girl's in second grade. And she's saying these really amazing things. And then together we read the verse at the bottom, and she says, I'm glad that God sees me the way I see me. Because not everybody does.
Wow.
And I'm like, yes. That's why I do this, yeah, right? That's yeah. why I do this.
Was there anyone in your life that took on that role?
Yes. I don't think we could survive.
Yeah.
I know I couldn't have survived without the people in my life. And I refer to them all the time as my big three. And you know, Sarah, if you would have read my book, you would know the answer to this question already.
This is a plug for the book for our listeners to go where it's available on probably at
Amazon. Yeah.
Amazon and your local trade store. I'm guessing.
Yes. Yes. but I call them my big three. And there's these three women that stood in the gap for me in different parts of my life that I cannot express my immense gratitude and thankfulness for. The first one, in chronological order, not in order of importance because they're all equally important, was this woman. Her name is Lori Davis, and she was my youth worker when I first started going to the Corps. And this woman is still the youth worker at the same Corps.
Wow.
17, 18 years later. So she's like wicked committed. Like, she got a Trailblazer Award at a commissioning one year. Super earned it. She's phenomenal. So I'm going to Corps, one of my favorite stories was that I didn't realize that the F word was a bad word, because everybody in my life said it. My mom said it. My teacher said it. Everybody. And so I'm going to the Corps, and I'm saying the F word all the time. Like, at least every fifth sentence has the F word in it. And so I'm just blasting.
They're all like wide-eyed.
And nobody seemed like it was a big deal.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so I'm like,
oh, that's great. That, you know, that's actually really cool. Because
they knew who I was,
cool.
Right?
Yeah.
They knew who I was. They knew that I wasn't there yet. And they knew, yeah. I think they saw the intent of my heart, that I wasn't saying this word
yeah.
to like hurt them or to be malicious. I honestly didn't know any better.
They were meeting you where you are.
Exactly. So I'm going to this Corps and I'm saying this word, and I actually said the F word during a prayer one day. And that's when Lori pulled me aside. She's like, so actually, we don't really say that word. I'm like, for real? Nobody told me. But as I'm going, I didn't believe in Jesus for a long, long, long time. But I started going to the Corps because I was loved there and I'd never felt loved before. And when I initially started to believe that Jesus loved me was when I realized that no matter what I did, no matter how naughty I was, that Lori loved me. And if Lori could love me, maybe Jesus could love me. Then the second woman that was really, really important in my life, her name is Jen Ahrens, and she's phenomenal. You know Jen Ahrens? She's a Central girl.
She was my singing company teacher.
Yeah, so small yes. world. She's like a mother in my life. I ran a day camp in San Francisco. I lived with her when I was 19. She was a mentor in my life before that, and she was the very first person that I told I want to become an officer. And she cried and tried to talk me out of it, which is good, though, because if you can talk yeah. somebody out of it, then you probably shouldn't do it.
She's wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So she's really, really, really important in my life. And still now, even we spoke just before I came, and phenomenal in my life. And the last woman, her name is Josephine Morton, and her husband, Mark, were the camp directors when I was a kid growing up. And I worked at camp all my high school life, and then a year after high school. And before I was there, before I really got to know them, I never, ever wanted to be married, because I never saw a successful marriage, not on the streets, not in the church, nowhere. All the marriages that I'd seen were either they had fallen apart and they were broken, or it seemed like they hated each other, or they were just only unkind, and the wife bagged on the husband, and the husband felt like everything was, you know, going out of his way. And I just, like, I don't want to be a part of that. I'd just rather be single. But then I got to know Mark and Josephine. And the love that they have for each other just was boundless. And he never belittled her. And he never put her down. And she never made him feel emasculated, you know? And there was, it was just what God intends a marriage to be. I'm sure not perfect.
Yeah.
But from the outside looking in, I thought, maybe I could be married.
Yeah.
And it was because of them that when I met my now husband, I thought, yeah, I think I could do this. And if they weren't in my life, if she wasn't in my life, then I'm sure I would never. Our daughter is Layla Josephine for Josephine. Mm-hmm. So really important. Ladies, and there's a ton more, but those are my big three.
Your big three.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay. We're going to go to the third level.
Yeah.
And this, like I said, is, you know, the vulnerable place. You've already shared a lot of vulnerable things already. So, you know, use your discretion to where you want to go. But, you know, if you knew me, you would know.
You know, this is rough because this is something I don't really like to say, but I think that's the point, right?
Yeah.
That's the point. Yeah. I think if you really, really knew me, then you would know that I've struggled with an eating disorder since I was 19 years old. And you would know the shame that I felt as the fat bulimic. Feeling like there's so much that you can't do right. You can't even be a bulimic, right? Our God is a God of healing and restoration. You know, it can still be a struggle, if I'm being totally honest. And it's something that still comes into my mind relatively frequently. But God's not done with any of us yet.
Thank you, Jesus.
Yeah.
That's a very vulnerable thing to share. I thank you so much for being willing to speak to that. Do you want to share any parts of your ways that God has healed you in that or in other broken areas?
Yeah. You know, but, you know, when we ran a summer camp, one of the things that we talked about with our kids when we would do a high ropes course or a challenge that's difficult or scary, we always called it challenge by choice, right? And we always gave people an out because it's not really real transparency and honesty if people don't have an out. Right? Then they're being forced to do it. And I think something that's been helpful in my healing and in my restoration is knowing when I'm safe to share and when I don't have to, you know, when I don't have to tell this person that that's been a struggle in my life. When I can reserve that for the people that are in my most inner of circles, you know, and I think that's been really helpful to me is to know that the things that hold us captive will only hold us captive when we keep them a secret. But I also think it's important to know with our wisdom who to share those secrets with.
Those are hard lessons to learn.
Word.
All right. Anything else you want to talk about? We've got a few minutes.
Yeah.
Since we were trying to make this a shorter episode, but
yeah,
we still have time.
So my book, you want to talk about
yeah.
my book? I have
yeah, yeah.
two, so we'll talk about one. And I okay. have to remind myself that people that don't know me in person, don't always know that I love to make jokes about being a diva because I'm like the antithesis of like a uppity, do you know who I am?
Yeah.
So I make jokes like that's who I am, but then okay. people don't always know that I'm kidding. So, yeah, I have a couple books out. The one that, came out first is called Love to a Whore's Daughter. And then the subtitle is Life and Faith Through the Lens of Grace and Redemption. This book I call my theological memoir. It's kind of like how I view life and faith and the world through a lens that has been very broken and abandoned and hurt. And I kind of tell people how this is my view on how you can love God and serve others when life is just kind of taking a dump on you. So, wow. Yeah. It's a little vulgar, but that's kind of who I am.
Oh,
so
that wasn't my wow. My wow was like, yeah,
yeah,
that's because it's very easy to retreat and not serve because yeah. of our own
or to become
pain.
Jaded, right? And to let our pain yeah. really define us. And yes. I think, you know, when I
that's what I was trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. when I went on a book tour, which was amazing. I never thought in a million years that would be something I would ever have the opportunity to do. And I'm still kind of, you know, over a year later blown away that I got the chance to do that. But when I sign the books, I almost always write on the inside, love your story. Because being the daughter of an addict and a whore is my story. But then the subtitle of Life and Faith Through the Lens of Grace and Redemption is really all of our story. And I think my life shifted when I stopped pretending that's where I'd come from. You know, all through leading up to training school and even the first few years of officership, I tried not to let anybody know who I was or where I'd come from. But when I finally decided You know what? It's all right, Lisa. Because you will always be the daughter of a prostitute. No matter what happens in your life, that will never change. But in addition to being the daughter of a prostitute, you're also the daughter of a king. Mm. So dance in that freedom. And so no matter what our stories are, I hope that we would love them, that we would embrace them, even the rough bits, even the parts that makes us maybe feel uncomfortable or embarrassed, that we would say, you know what, this is who I am, and God's just getting started. Mm-hmm. So then I have the second one, which is called Brave, and that's not like a book. It's a guided journal, like I mentioned.
Oh, yeah.
So that's been really awesome. We did a manual on how to do these Brave events, which are kind of like a one-day youth councils.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. And it's, you bring these girls together from foster homes and group homes and hopefully even probation if you're able to access those girls. Then bring them and you just do an event that just makes them say, wow, I am really worth being celebrated. So they have this event. We partner them up with intentional mentors. And so when this event is over, they'll have somebody they can talk to, they can rely on. They meet once a month, ideally, for interest-based activities. Maybe it's basketball or hockey or caring for animals or picking up trash and caring for the environment, whatever you're interested in. And that this relationship would continue so that if someone tries to come into this girl's life with intentions that are less than noble, they would be able to say, wait, hold on, you can't do that to me. You can't coerce me or trick me, because that's what you do to an oppressed person, and I am free. Mm. They'll have these mentors to walk alongside them and guide them to see what that looks like. So if you want to do that, you can contact SA Justice. I believe it's org or com. I don't know. Just Google it. You'll find it.
Yeah.
And you can have those resources sent to your location on how to do your own Brave events and have access to these journals, so that even if the mentorship relationship isn't as flourishing and prosperous as we would hope, these girls can have these journals and do some self-guided exploration and learning and discovery. And they're written so that I wrote it because I know that not everybody is a writer. So there's places to write. There's places to draw. There's places to daydream. There's places to do all kinds of things. And in the back, I have a section on life skills, because I knew when I was a kid in foster care, I didn't know how to do anything. So it starts with a letter to my 12-year-old self. And then it ends with, here's things that you may need to know, kind of in a way to reparent in some ways. Like I have in there how to cook an egg, and there's instructions on how to cook an egg 6 different ways. What's your favorite? Mm-hmm. What? Here's instructions on handling conflict. Here's how to protest. Here's how to wash your clothes. And here's what the symbols on your tags mean. Here's how you handle drama and conflict. Here's how you do all these things that I wish someone would have taught me when I was between 13 and 18, when I had nobody. The end game is that we would do a few of these journals, but they're the first journal and the manual on how to do this event is available for you in SA Justice.
So there, it's all ready.
It's all ready. It's done. We have a launch coming up. I'm speaking at Vanguard. I think it's next month. I don't really know. I usually don't keep in my brain what I don't need to know today. Uh-huh. So I know that that's not today.
What's Vanguard?
It's a university. It's a big university that cares a lot about social justice. So me and Danielle and this other woman named Naomi, who's instrumental in really starting Brave at a church called Church on 7th Street in Long Beach. Mm. It was her idea. It was her team. And we just took it and ran with it. Mm-hmm. So it's kingdom stuff. It's kingdom work. And it's available.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I want to check that out.
Do it. Wolf Ticket. What? Do you know Wolf Ticket? You have that here? Okay. No. That's a that's a West Coast thing. What we do, and you can only do it with people that are 18 or over, is that when someone says that they're going to do something, like, man, those cookies smell so great, I want to do a backflip. If I call Wolf Ticket, you have to do a backflip because you said you were going to do it. And if you don't do it, I get to punch you in the face.
Oh. But that's my moneymaker.
Well, then you better do it then, so you don't get a punch in the face.
Okay, I will check it out. Yeah. As I said, I'll be a woman of my word. Okay, well, we're going to shut it down and wrap up because it's a busy weekend at Regen, and we've got to get ready for a pep rally banquet. Did you bring anything to wear, Lisa?
No.
Well, you're in luck because I've got a box full of caps and gowns.
Sweet, I'm ready.
You can just put that on.
I'm ready.
All right, cool. Thank you so much for your time for sharing about your life and ministry.
Yeah, thanks. It's been good, and love and blessings to everybody who takes a listen.
Wasn't that conversation about Lisa's story and how it's impacted her ministry an inspiration? She's brave in that she broke the cycle in her family. She's brave because she accepted Jesus and turned her entire life to serving him. She's brave in being who she is and not compromising. She's brave for starting new ministries and sharing her story. Visit our website, www.uscwomensministries.com, to learn more about Lisa, her book, and the Brave resources. And as always, please feel welcome to write to me regarding the show by emailing theprepare podcast@usc.salvationarmy.org. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram @Central Women. Thanks for listening. See you in May.